You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Total Soccer Show, and a special episode in which we dig into all things United Soccer League via a chat with USL Sporting Director Mark Cartwright. Mark joined USL around a year ago in June 2021 as the league's first ever sporting director, with a remit that focuses on the USL Academy program, talent identification, player development, coaching, contracts, and global transfers. Mark is a former goalkeeper who played for a number of English teams and for the Florida Tech Panthers during his collegiate career. He's also been a manager, an agent, a FIFA consultant, a co-creator of the English Football Association's Level 5 Technical Directors Workshop, and he was also technical director at Stoke City between 2012 and 2019. So yes, Mark has done it all in the beautiful game, and now he's realising the USL's big ambitions, aiming to grow its pro player pathway and increase its visibility on a global scale. My name's Ryan Bailey. Here's my chat with Mark, who was speaking to TSS from USL headquarters in Tampa, Florida. Mark, thank you very much for joining us on Total Soccer Show. How are you today? Where are you today?
I'm great, Ryan. Thanks. Firstly, thanks for the invite. And so at the moment, I'm currently at the USL headquarters, which is based in Tampa.
Very nice. And do you set your watch to the storms at 3 p.m. every day down in Tampa? Is that how it works down there?
It pretty much, mate, yeah. Certainly over the next couple of months, you'll be able to see, literally just behind me over the shoulders, the airport, and you can see the storms rolling in literally on the dot, 3 o'clock, 3:30. And if it looks a particularly bad one, you get the hell out of Dodge and go home, because they struggle to drive at the best of times over here, but with a massive thunderstorm, it makes it even worse.
Indeed. Now, obviously, a little bit of a different climate for you in Florida. What was that part of what attracted you to the role to come over to the States? I mean, I could understand totally if it was.
It wasn't actually. I mean, I've been here before, so I did a university scholarship in Florida. So I'd always, at the age of 18, so I always sort of, I guess, fell in love with America back then. And then, but obviously, my pathway took me a different route. Now, to be fair, coming here was more about where I saw the league going and how could I help it develop and get to that place where it was a stronger league and a bigger player, certainly in terms of the global transfer market.
So you took this job about a year ago, Mark. Before I get into that, let's talk about your actual role. You're a sporting director. Obviously, many of our listeners will be aware of what that role is at a club. But what is it in the context of USL? The USL has a chairman, it has a president, a COO, a CEO, and so on. But how do you describe what you do day to day?
So if you're aware of what a sporting director does at a club, then you've got to multiply that by the 40 so professional clubs. So you're overseeing all 40 clubs who are all at different stages of their development. So it's more of education and helping them get to the point where they have the right structure in place, they're doing the right due diligence, have the right processes, so that they're not wasting money unnecessarily. And they're also looking at the succession planning and development of players so that they can start bringing in that extra revenue stream that is the global transfer market, which is, as you can see in Europe, it's absolutely massive. So we're not quite there yet in terms of those fees, but the last couple have certainly raised the bar, and I think we're just going to go from strength to strength.
So you started with USL about a year ago, last June, I believe, if I'm correct there.
Yeah.
So how did you see the US soccer landscape when you arrived? How did you see the USL landscape? That work you spoke about there, was there a lot of it to be done?
What you find, Ryan, is on the business side of the clubs, they're incredibly sophisticated. The league helps them massively. You know, they're well run in terms of ticketing, commercial activities, game day experience. The whole thing is incredibly well run. But that's part of the problem. They just looked at it from a business point of view. So players, you know, who are, if you look at a P&L sheet, the players' wages are the biggest liability. So the owners were looking at players as being liabilities and not assets. So again, you're having to change the viewpoint of that to make them understand that these are actually your club's biggest assets. And from that, you then go into contract management. And if you're only giving players 1 year with 1 year extensions, you're not able to monetize the value of that player because you haven't got long enough to either market them or you've only got one transfer window when you can sell them. So again, it then builds into contract management and everything that goes along with it, then the academy, succession planning. So everything that you and I would probably take for granted in a Bundesliga team, in a Premier League team, you know, we're having to sort of not start from scratch, but start from the bottom up, but which is great because it gives you the opportunity to really put something in place that is going to be there for the long term. And, you know, that's what a sporting director does. You know, it takes the vision of the owner and puts those short, medium and long term strategies in place to make sure that that club is still there in 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
And you mentioned you were at college. That was Florida Tech, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Very nice. And what's your thoughts on how the game has moved on since you were last in Florida to now? I mean, I moved to the States in 2011 and I saw a massive sea change in the popularity of the game. You know, more and more soccer shirts on the streets and that kind of anecdotal stuff. So from back when you were there before, how much has the game grown?
It's massive. I mean, nobody... I mean, I was out here in 1991, so a little bit just before you. But in terms of the game then, you know, it was relatively unknown. Nobody, you know, the top sports were the top sports: baseball, basketball, you know, American football. But I think now, soccer has grown, and it's probably the third most watched sport in the country now. So, in terms of figures, you know, it's flipped on the head. When I came over here, you know, and probably when you were over here as well, parents wanted players to go to college. You know, there was nobody saw a career in football. Nobody saw that was where you could go and earn a decent living. Whereas that, again, that's now flipped on its head, and parents can see that actually little Johnny can go and make a hell of a good career for himself. He's got the clubs where he can go and play. He's got the pathway to Europe. And that's where all the players want to play. You know, all the top American lads want to go and test themselves in Europe. So again, it's making sure that as a league, we can build those pathways for the players and get them over there.
Now, you've got a lot of experience in the game, Mark, if you don't mind me saying, in addition to playing at a collegiate level, you were a player in the UK as well. You're a goalkeeper. I'm not going to call you a journeyman. You play for a few clubs though, right?
Yeah, I did.
And you've been a manager, you've been an agent, and a technical director at Stoke as well. To focus on your playing career, you played for Shrewsbury, Wrexham, Halifax, and a few others. Was there a career highlight on the field for you?
I had a few. I mean, I was lucky enough that when I was at Brighton, we won promotion, and I've always found, you know, that was a special club for me. That's got a, you know, a big place in the heart. I mean, had a great team, had great team spirit, you know, from the back four all the way up to sort of Bobby Zamora at the top, who obviously went on and did very well for himself. You know, and then just some of the achievements, you know, that I had with Wrexham, you know, being a Welsh under 21, and also, you know, getting to be involved in the European Cup Winners' Cup, because back then, if you won the Welsh Cup, you qualified for Europe. So just some of these things that you don't, when you're actually doing it, you don't think anything of it. It's only when you sit, when it finishes and you can sit back and reflect that you think, oh yeah, you know, actually I didn't have the career that I wanted to have, but I still had a bloody good career, you know, and it lasted 10, 11 years. So, you know, I should be thankful for that. And I wouldn't be sat here. So the way I look at it, Ryan, is you know, I did my apprenticeship at York, and that was a great experience. I had a very bad injury, and I was told I'd never play the game again. And at that point, you know, you sort of battling mentality kicks in. You go, no, I'll prove you wrong. And so I came back and did well, and I had the opportunity to come to America or go on trial with Sunderland, and I chose America. And it was at that point, leaving the country and coming here, it made me grow up, you know, because you're away from home. I think if I'd have stayed in England, I'd have been like, you know, 90% of the other young players, and I'd have drifted out of the game. I think, but taking that step out, coming here, you know, winning the national championships, being on your own, growing up, developing, that's what gave me the mental strength to then come back to England and actually make it as a professional, you know, firstly with Wrexham. I was there for 7 years, actually, and then it was, I then became nomadic and a journeyman after that.
And sitting there with the choice of the northeast of England or southern Florida, tough call?
No.
I didn't think so. So, Mike, you spent a long time, as I say, as technical director at Stoke, working with Tony Pulis and Mark Hughes and, I suppose, Gary Rowett towards...
Yeah, Paul Lambert, Gary Rowett, Nathan Jones. We were very secure, and then we went through a few in a short space of time, which was very unlike Stoke.
Yeah, so you would have seen a period of big growth, of profit, of the squad value going up, big signings like Jean Shaqiri and Marko Nautovic coming in during your time. What was that like being there as Stoke was growing as a club?
Well, we had limits, so we were never we were, in terms of remit and what we would spend and what we wouldn't spend. You know, we were very sort of clever with the recruitment at that point. Obviously, the change in style of football from Tony to Mark was a key factor in the type of player that we were bringing in. We had a good base of, we had a strong base of players, strong mentality, you know, strong characters. And to bring in sort of, you know, the more flair players like Bojan and Marco, the hardest part of bringing them in was convincing them that we weren't Stoke City of old, you know. So we were constantly battling with the long ball, long throw-ins that were sort of, that were Stoke, you know, prior to Mark coming in. Now, Mark was a huge factor in the fact that we could go and get these players, and we could sit down and we would, you know, we would talk to them about how he wanted to play and what he wanted to do. And then I think, you know, at one point with Ibrahim Afellay and Marco and a few of us, we had more Champions League winners than Chelsea in the team at one point, which was very bizarre. And the start, and it worked, you know, for a period of time, it worked really well. And it was incredible to see some of the games, you know, beating Arsenal, Liverpool, I mean, beating Liverpool 6-1 at home on the last day of the season was phenomenal. And it was just those moments, you know, stick with you, you know, throughout your career. You don't get everything right, obviously, but, you know, you've got to try and stay consistent and not get too down when things aren't going well. But at the same time, you've got to enjoy the beating those top teams and Man United and Chelsea. It was good times.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Now, in your position as a technical director, as sort of the conduit between the owners and the team, if you will, how much of a pressure is there to turn a profit versus, say, development long-term of the squad and of the club itself? I mean, obviously, the Coates family who own Stoke, they're not fly-by-night owners by any means. They're well-established and they have a betting empire, and they're not going anywhere from Stoke. So I'm not saying they're going to be terrible owners by any means. They're probably quite the opposite. But what's the pressures that you would face as a technical director in terms of balancing the books and balancing the squad?
Well, it's like anything, isn't it? Yes, they want to invest in the club, but they also don't want to be stupid investors. So you've got to. When I first went in, the academy was literally just a building that was attached to the club. You know, there was no player in there that was going to be good enough to break through into a Premier League team. So that was one of the issues that we needed to address. And then also, you know, making the team better, making it more valuable, actually being able to, what Stoke hadn't done is buy players, develop them, sell them. So, you know, Marco was probably one of the first. We got signed Marco for $2.5 million and sold him for, you know, 20 to 25 million. And then Mark Muniesa we had on a free from Barcelona and sold him for 5 million. So little things like that. And to be fair, the owners were great, because anything that we brought in like that got reinvested back into the squad. You know, so for example, when we had Jack Butland coming through and we could sell Asmir Begovic to Chelsea, we could do so to then help us bring in Zerdan Shaqiri. You know, so it was little. So they're the pressures of trying to make sure that it's all mapped out. And if, you know, if we went outside the remit, you know, so for example, if we were going to sign a young player, you know, but he was, you know, it could be quite expensive, young players nowadays. It would be a real justification of why should we bring this in? What's the pathway for that player? How soon do we see him getting into the first team? And then, you know, what sort of value would he have? So they were very clever owners. You know, the chief exec was a very clever guy. And if you could justify the reasons behind the investment, they would do it. You know, and I think they've had certainly a lot of the younger players, and don't get me wrong, the academy takes a while to get going. You're not, it's not an immediate fix. You know, it's probably a 4 or 5 year investment. And to the Coates family, you know, they absolutely wanted the academy to succeed and they wanted younger players to come through. But to do that, we had to go and recruit players, you know. So, I mean, they've got a whole host of them now that are doing incredibly well in the first team, with Tyrese Campbell, Nathan Collins, who they sold, Harry Suter, Josh Timon, you know, and these were all players that were young, brought in, developed, molded, loaned, and got through to the first team. So, you know, it's doing that. So the pressures are, you know, can you make the academy work? Can you make the first team balance itself out as well, whilst, you know, staying in a good place?
Now, the cliche at Stoke, Mark, is that can they do it on a cold Tuesday night in Stoke? I think it might have been Alan Shearer or someone like that who coined that one. I forget. But What I want to know is, does USL have a cold night in Stoke? Is it like a cold night in Detroit? What's the equivalent?
It's going to be, some of the northern states certainly get a little bit chilly in the winter months. So certainly Detroit is the team, you know, that have got that sort of strong fan base. You know, it's they're probably the one that you would say, okay, it's a hardworking, city, you know, probably can get pretty damn cold, can get pretty windy, pretty wet. So yeah, I would probably say they're probably the one, mate.
Probably not Florida. Not too chilly down there. Now it seems to me, Mark, that USL's in a hot place right now. It's in a period of growth. You've got new clubs arriving in the next few years. Teams like Indy 11 doing plenty of investment in their facilities. New leagues and divisions for women coming in, the USL Super League coming in. And I think I saw earlier today, as we record, a 10-year partnership with a company called Legends to accelerate the business side of things.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a very exciting time to be a part of the league.
No, it is. And that's, again, you know, we spoke at the start about what attracted you to it. And you can see, you know, if you were looking at a timeline, you know, the leagues around Europe are fully adults. You know, the USL is probably in that toddler, you know, sort of 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old sort of stage. There's so much growth left in it. There's something ridiculous like $3 billion worth of investment into stadiums and training grounds going on around the league. And then with the good partnerships with companies like Legends that will help, again, the cash flow on the business side. You know, if we then bring up the level of professionalism on the footballing side, then it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And the fans are here. You know, the fans want to see it. We're about building community clubs in areas where maybe Major League, you know, don't think it's a big enough market, but for us, you know, if there's a club there and it can be a community club and it can, you know, grow with the community, then it's worthwhile venture.
That's really interesting. You mentioned community. That was one of the things I was going to bring up as maybe a differentiator between USL and MLS, where I would suggest maybe cynically that some MLS teams might treat community as marketing, whereas it seems like a lot of USL teams are really part of the fabric of the community.
That's the goal. I mean, the MLS have, you know, can't fault them. They've done an incredible job in what they do with how they run it and the value of the franchises and everything else. But yeah, I mean, we 100% want to be that fabric. We want the fans to, you know, to ultimately become, you know, to become tribal, that if you're in a certain area, that's your club. You know, we want our clubs to develop local talent as well as bringing in other talents. So to really, and we've got owners that are 100% committed to being able to give something back to that community through the joys of sport, you know. So we are going down that route. So, you know, and these clubs are also very much run like European clubs. You know, we're not a single entity league. We're the league, you know, and the clubs own their players. They can do what they want with the players, but we're here to guide them and give them the help to make them become the best clubs they can be.
So not being single entity, Mark, and having the clubs own their players, is that a big strength for the clubs when it comes to the transfer market? Is it making them easier to deal with for foreign clubs, for example?
Massively, massively. And, you know, I don't want to talk out of line about anybody else's model, but I do think that, you know, if you're a European club and you see how you just have to make one phone call and that's it, you go through the deal like you would in Europe, then I do think that that's, the more you can look like them, the more comfortable they feel with you, then the easier it is. You know, for me, we've got a couple of initiatives that we're doing a hell of a lot of research on, you know, promotion, relegation and aligning with the international calendar. Now, for me, you know, from a selfish point of view, you know, I know we have the weather situation. It gets incredibly hot in the south during the summer, gets incredibly cold in the north during the winter. But I think if we can align ourselves with the international calendar and make that work, then again, it only benefits our clubs in terms of transfers because we're so aligned then with the rest of the world and the game.
Is that a realistic proposition, aligning the calendars?
Well, it's something we're doing a lot of study on and research. And, you know, if once we've got all that in, it will be given to the owners and it will go, you know, go to a vote from there.
And is that the same case for promotion and relegation? That's a hot topic, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and again, I think the majority of fans in America have grown up watching the Premier League, Serie A, the Championship, Bundesliga. So they're excited about that. You know, you talk about meaningful games, you know, and they want this. They want the buzz of that. So I think, and we're not in a position, it's not like the Premier League, where if you get relegated, the difference in money is so vast, we're not there yet. So, you know, it's very much achievable at the moment. So, I'd like to see it, but, you know, it's down to the owners on that one.
Yeah, and this is, of course, we're talking about promotion and relegation within the USL ecosystem itself, right?
Yeah.
Which, that would be pretty exciting from a fan's perspective, definitely.
Well, it'd be the first time ever in American professional sports league that there's been promotion and relegation.
Exciting. We'll look out for that then, shall we?
Yeah, hopefully.
So what does USL aim to be and aim to become? Presumably it's to become a part of the global soccer ecosystem, a bigger part of that conversation. Is it to be a selling league?
Yeah, I think we do want, you know, listen, if you look at the world market, you know, we're a smaller player in that. So I think we've got the biggest footprint of clubs across the whole of America. So if you figure out how many players there are in that footprint, you know, we undoubtedly can develop some of the top players for the world in the coming years, you know, given the pathway that they now have through the academy system into the first teams. You know, they have to be good enough, obviously. And the moment a player of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 hits a first team consistently in any professional league around the world, the top clubs will watch you because of the technology that's available to them now. So, you know, if we continue developing like we are doing, and we continue strengthening the league in terms of the standard and the quality on the pitch, then we will become more and more involved in that transfer market. And I think it's imperative of for young clubs and in a young league, you have to be a selling league. Because then you can reinvest the income back into your team, back into your clubs and everything else around it. So it will, as we become more and more a selling league, we'll become a stronger league with it as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
James Keston, the owner of Orange County SC, had a quote from a couple weeks back. They sold Kobe Henry, of course, to Stade Rennes a couple weeks back for a record fee. He said, "The young US player is the most undervalued asset on the international transfer market in all of global football." What do you think of that?
I would probably agree with him at the moment. Because, you know, certainly we have to consistently produce the talent and we have to consistently sell it. And then it has to consistently prove that it's worthy of that next move. So Kobe Henry goes to Stade de Reims, does really well. You know, there's every chance he'll get sold for 20, 30, 40 million. And then if the next one underneath him, you know, goes through, whether it's, you know, the kid from Louisville or a kid from Birmingham, you know, wherever they go next, if they then develop and move on, then the value rises. But I think with each deal that we are doing at the moment, we're getting more and more value for the players because clubs are around the world are recognising what the talent we've got. We're not going to hit Premier League prices, you know, because that's just unachievable because we don't have that global sort of footprint. But, you know, we're not looking to do that. We're just looking to make sure that we build this up slowly, steadily, properly, and just then end up at a fair market value.
And I suppose it's about establishing a new pro or an alternate pro player pathway, isn't it? There's the collegiate way, there's MLS. There's been a trend in recent years of a lot of young talent going to lower level European teams. So is the idea, or is an idea that you'd like to promote, that talent might be better off being developed domestically?
Well, I think that's already happening, Ryan. There's a lot of young players. So if you take Orange County, for example, they've probably sold 5 or 6 players to Europe. So they've got a proven pathway for a young player to ignore the shining lights of another league, come into Orange County, come in with a set plan, a set pathway of making sure that he's developed, he plays, and he gets that transfer to Europe. So I think as more and more of our team get that pathway in place, we're seeing it more and more where younger players want to come. They want to, you know, be involved in the first team level rather than reserve team or academy. They want to play games and they want to be shown how they can be developed and given that opportunity to move abroad. Because, you know, ultimately everybody wants to really go and play in one of the top 5 leagues in the world, don't they?
Indeed. And are you getting the impression that those top 5 leagues are the USL is more on their radar? Are you getting more phone calls?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, literally, in the last, well, literally yesterday, I was contacted by one of the top 5 Premier League teams about one of the players that's at one of our clubs that is in the, you know, American under-19s, and he played against England under-19s. Now, the issue there is the GBE rules, but, you know, if you've got one of the top 5 teams of that caliber, then, you know, if you go to the Bundesliga where it's a lot easier to get an American lad in, or into Spain to one of the top clubs there, you know you've got the talent now. So they are, so Real Sociedad bought a young lad from Louisville literally 12 months ago. And he's been there, he's played in their reserve team, which was in the second division. So he's already playing at a high level there in Spain. And he's also been with the first team, you know, and Sociedad are not a poor quality outfit. So, again, you know, it shows that we have the standard, we have the level, and it will just keep growing.
Let's talk about the academy platform in USL as well. How key is that to growing the league, and how and what have you been doing to help that grow?
Well, to be fair, I think the academy league is about maybe 3 years old, and our technical director, Liam O'Connell, literally built it single-handedly, and he's done an incredible job. But then you've got to then, and he has a real passion for that youth development and getting, you know, younger players into first teams and the pathway to pro, as he calls it. And I think he's like I say, he's done an incredible job there. And now it's educating the owners about succession planning and being able to, you know, give these kids a chance, bring them through, see when they're ready, see when they're not ready, bring them forward, push them back. And again, you know, as our the clubs that are better at it used tend to have the sporting director model. So Louisville had James O'Connor, you know, Orange County have obviously got Peter Nugent. And so these clubs are actually putting a real strategy around youth development and bringing them into the fold. And then, you know, look, you're developing players, whether that player is then good enough to go to Europe, or whether that player then potentially goes to the MLS, or whether he stays with you for 5-10 years or stays in the USL ecosystem for that long. You've developed a player. So, you know, it's very much a tactical approach by a lot of the clubs now. And I think now that other people can see it working, you know, more and more will join forces, listen to the messages that I'm promoting and sort of come on board.
And does the academy model, does it work in cohesion with the community aspect of these clubs? I think of Charlotte, for example, where the Charlotte Independence's Academy is massive. It's got thousands of kids in it, whereas, you know, the MLS team is servicing dozens of kids by comparison. So is there a tie-in there?
Well, the issue that you have over here is it's a pay-to-play model at youth level, which, rightly or wrongly, you know, is here. So it's the academy system has to work, whether it's affiliated or working closely with these youth systems, because they have hundreds of thousands of players in these clubs. And if you work closely with those in an affiliation, then your academy is your elite level player. And he's then on that pre-pro pathway, hopefully, to get into the first team. So again, it's utilizing what you have, you know, and also, you know, because there are also going to be players out there that whose parents can't afford to pay for them to go into the academy and play. So, you know, some of our clubs are running fully funded academies that still have affiliation. So you're not missing, you know, little Johnny who can't afford to pay whatever it costs to go into the youth club, but by Christ, he's a hell of a good footballer. So, you know, some clubs offer scholarships to bring them in. Some clubs fully fund the academies. So that, you know, they're very clever in the way that they're trying to make sure they don't miss that hidden gem.
And also we have USLW now with 44 teams across 20 states in 7 divisions, and the fully professional USL Super League I mentioned earlier coming next year as well. That's a pretty exciting development under your tenure too.
I know it is. It's great. I mean, it's I think the women's game here is far more advanced than I've seen in anywhere around the world. So genuinely, our women's league will have the ability to be one of the top 5 women's league in the world. And again, if you look at the talent pool here, whether that's and the pathway to professional is slightly different for women than it is for men. You know, they tend to go to college first and then turn professional. But again, that will shift. That focus will shift when they see what type of career they can have in the game. But I think, again, the, you know, with the footprint, with the, you know, because we'll men's, you know, girls, men's and girls academies together, you know, the ability to produce players, you know, the America should be the biggest exporter of top talented female players to the rest of the world, without a doubt, because it is so far ahead of everybody else.
Definitely so. A few more questions for you, Mike. You've been very generous with your time today. I appreciate it. This is a difficult question. I'm not asking you to pick a favourite child here, but are there teams in USL who you'd highlight for doing it right, for upholding the values of the league, for development, for coaching? I mean, you've mentioned Louisville, you've mentioned Orange County. Is there anyone you wanted to shine a light on?
Well, I think everybody, you know, I mean, we spoke about Detroit and what they've built up there in terms of that community fan base. You know, there's a big tick. Louisville and Orange County in terms of structure and processes and pathways and plans and, you know, the sale of players. But each individual club is doing something special, you know, and it doesn't always get highlighted because it's not the big, you know, flashy headlines or whatever. But I think it's, you know, that we're not at the point where there's anybody that people are doing outstanding jobs in various departments. And I think other clubs are then realizing that it's the right way. So they're then being very intelligent and joining forces and trying to put the right structures and process. So I wouldn't say that there's favorite, that there's, listen, there's people that are doing it very well at the moment. There are people that, and then there's people that are learning how to do it. And then there's people that are just at the very beginning of dealing with it as well. But at each stage, you would say they're all doing very, very well. So, I mean, I've not got a favorite child, so to speak, but you know, you've also got to acknowledge the fact that some clubs are already at a higher level and some clubs are building, and even the ones that are building are, you know, their enthusiasm and their desire to learn is you know, is very, very important. It's also very good because they're showing that they have that commitment to building something special.
Last one for you, Mark, and it's a big one. What do you hope to build upon and improve in USL in, say, the coming months, in the short term, in the coming years, we'll say? And then what does USL aim to be long term, 10 years, 15, 20 years?
Well, if we start with the long term, I think it's to be, you know, in an ideal world, and this is only my opinion, you know, it would be, you've got good, profitable clubs within a very secure structure that, you know, that is aligned with the international calendar and has promotion and relegation. That will have raised the levels, you know, both on and off the pitch in terms of quality and professionalism. I think that's the sort of long-term, just continued growth on the business side and specifically on the football side, which is obviously my remit. So in the short term, it's just continuing the educational process, whether that's with the owners, the chief execs, the general managers, the sporting directors, even the coaches, to get the footballing side of the club to the same sophistication levels as the business side. And if we match those two together, then, you know, this is going to be a very, very strong league.
Exciting times ahead, Mark. You're doing very good work. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you. I'll sling in one more question for you. Is there anything you miss the most from the UK? I know this. I get fielded this question a lot. For me, Cadbury's chocolate and going to Nando's, because I'm a walking cliche. How about you?
I have to admit, chocolate 100%. You know, every time I've been back to do the stuff that I do with the FA, I take a spare suitcase and come back with a shed load because the kids miss it as well. So certainly that, I'm going to say probably, at the moment it's the, you know, you can, I miss the passion, you know, cause it's not quite that, it's here, but it's not, you know, 30,000 screaming fans or whatever it is, but that will come as the stadiums develop and everything else. So, you know, that intensity that you get, with club football over there. But no, chocolate, definitely Galaxy, 100%. I think that's our weakness. And do you know what else? Walker's crisps. I miss the crisps. Cheese and onion crisps, mate. Missed them as well.
Yeah. Are they Lay's in the US, I guess? It's the equivalent, but not quite. It's not quite there, is it, the flavours?
No, and last but not so, three things. Galaxy chocolate, Walker's crisps, and white bread.
Yes.
The bread is different over here.
Very different, you're right. Yeah, I'd add bacon to the list as well. We could go on all day about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, we definitely could. I'm not going to complain. I can't complain about where I am.
Exactly. Mark, as I say, you're doing wonderful stuff with the USL. Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate you. Cheers.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Ryan. Cheers, mate. Slash it.